Welcome to the Ieni Law Podcast. This is Elijah Adefope, an attorney partner at Ieni Law. We are a law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. We practice in the sports and entertainment fields. We do intellectual property, immigration, corporate law as well. This is our podcast where we touch on the business of business, the business of sports, of entertainment, of media, of music, of film, of television. We also touch on the business of money. Today is a very special episode. It's a special episode because it is our first podcast episode. Congratulations. Is in order to us, for us, and by us. Well, today we have a good friend of mine, Michael Anyanwu. He is a tax accountant based in Miami, Florida. He's also a former roommate of mine at good old Valdosta, Georgia, where we both attended school. Today's episode is called Full Circle. It's called Full Circle because, you know, at this point in my life and this season that I'm in, I really feel like a lot of things have come full circle. And it's very special and it's very significant that my very first episode is with Michael. And I feel like we both are coming full circle in a lot of ways. Well, without further ado, here's today's episode. I hope you guys enjoy the first 8 minutes and a half or so. We're just going into his background. And we're also touching on some international financial laws, tax havens, tax disclosures for those with international financial issues and international bank accounts. Excuse me. If you find that stuff boring, you can skim past the first 8.5 minutes where we start touching on tax issues for small business owners, for entrepreneurs, for those in the entertainment and sports industry. We also touch on tax tips. We touch on tips on how to manage and organize your business, your financial statements. We also touch on business investments and how to evaluate those business investments. I hope you guys enjoy today's episode. As always, feedback is appreciated. Thank you guys. Catch you at the end. Hey, Mike, what's going on, man?
It's going good. How you doing?
I'm good. Okay, so we're set. So, yeah, first of all, man, I just want to thank you for doing this. We go way back, a few years. I think all the way back to, 2011?
Yeah, I'll say 2011. That was my freshman year
in college. Yeah, we go way back. We got quite a few stories that we won't talk about right now.
No, man.
But I'm calling this episode Full Circle, you know, just because not just today, not just me and you, but I've just been noticing a lot of things in my life kind of just going full circle, you know. And so for me personally and with you, it's gratifying, you know, to just see how far we've come, you know, where we are today and the things that we're doing.
Definitely.
So just starting out, can you just give a little bit of your background, a little bit of, you know, what you currently do, how you got into what you're doing right now?
Well, currently I'm a tax accountant for a mid-sized firm in South Miami, Florida. I actually stumbled across this firm kind of by accident. I was working for a prior firm called Carl Reed & Ingram, where I mainly just did, you know, just tax returns, just basic tax returns, you know, maybe a couple businesses, but mostly, you know, like nurses, you know, a couple doctors, and just your everyday, you know, workers.
Right.
So I saw myself coming to an end with this firm. So, you know, it was time to look for a new one. And I was applying everywhere in the world, from the West Coast to North to, you know, Atlanta. And I ended up getting an interview with this particular firm in Miami. And I felt like it was a good fit. And they drew me in when they told me that, you know, I could potentially be working with international clients and doing international work.
Okay. And I remember we kind of spoke about some of that work that you were doing in terms of international work, international and offshore finances. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, normally when you're a foreigner, you know, you have your bank accounts, you know, like every normal American would have their bank accounts. But when you're a foreigner and you're doing business in the United States, you have to disclose all such assets depending on how long you stay in America. Now, say you come to America and you were here for 30 days, you know, you don't have to disclose everything that you have offshore, but say you're over here, I believe it's like 185 days, you know, don't quote me. There's a test that you have to do, you know, there's a travel days test where I would look up your passport information, and then I would check to see how many days you were in America for the past 3 years. And if you meet that threshold, all right, now we have to disclose everything. So it's called FBARS, which is a form 114, where you disclose your bank account, your bank, where the bank account is at, the address, how much money's in the account. And once that, say the threshold is $10,000. So if your bank accounts don't throughout the whole entire year are less than $10,000, they have not reached that amount, you don't have to disclose it. But once it hits that mark, at any point in time throughout the year, you have to disclose that particular bank account along with all your other bank accounts. So if you're at $9,999, you ain't got to disclose nothing. But once that penny gets you over, you have to disclose everything. I deal with disclosing financial statements, as in, like, you know, foreign corporations. You know, you're not reporting the income on this particular form, but you have to report what is on there. And with the new laws, you know, incorporated, you have to follow GAAP rules when it comes to 54-1s. You know, you have to report all dividend income, and you have to specially allocate it. So if you're in a situation where you have salaries in another country and you're paying taxes in another country, you know, you need to report it on your U.S. so you're not double dipping and paying more taxes than you should. Okay. Now you'll get a credit.
Okay, so speaking about offshore bank accounts, offshore finances, is that a smart tax saving strategy for business people, people generating, let's say, you know, high levels of income here? I think Jay-Z just had a lyric about that. Is that a smart tax saving strategy to create offshore or overseas bank accounts? And if so, you know, or if not, why do people do things like that?
I wouldn't say it's the smartest thing to do, because as US citizens, you gotta remember you're taxed on worldwide income.
Okay.
No matter what it is. So but say, you know, you're in a foreign country, you know, and you have a bank account over there, there's no point of trying to, you know, if you're frequently in another country, you know, why would you need to keep converting cash? Like, just keep the cash in the bank account over there. And when you need to use money in that foreign country, use the money there, you know.
Okay.
You know, for traveling purposes, or if you know you're finna be in Italy for next few months, or, you know, you travel to Italy every single year, you know, you might as well keep a bank account. You can't hide money, because with the way things are now, you know, bank accounts just do not work alongside with America for whatever reasons. But now, you know, certain countries are getting blacklisted, or certain banks are getting blacklisted in different countries that are not cooperating with the United States.
Wow.
And, you know, and if that's the situation and you're on that, you know, that blacklist, you know, it's kind of like red flags. Like, you know, why are you banking with them? You know, they're bad. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, and like I said, you know, there's tax savings. So if you, not tax havens, but if you're in a situation where you're in a country and you're doing business over there and their taxes are high, you know, I mean, that could, you know, tax credit can help you, you know, whenever you have to record that income for the next year, or, you know, XYZ. There's not too many, like, you really can't save money across seas.
Okay.
Not anymore, because of the 965 tax, which was like, all right, well, if you had income and you didn't record it, you're getting taxed right now. And that was implemented in 2017. So right as of right now, there is no money to save. You know, you can't hide any money.
Understood. And we saw quite a few large companies actually get caught that way, because they had amassed large sums of money overseas, but then they couldn't bring it back in because the United States were going to tax them at significant tax rates, right?
Yeah, say you had income in Ireland, right, and in a foreign company, but you're a U.S. citizen. You know, say they generated X amount of money and they issued out dividends, but if you never brought those dividends to the United States, then you wouldn't have to, you wouldn't have to report it, you know, and dividends, interest, all that income is, you know, taxed at a certain rate depending on your tax bracket. But now, it doesn't matter if you got the money or not. You're still getting taxed as if you did get it. Okay. So, you know, you have to be mindful of when companies actually declare dividends. So there's a lot of times where I work with international clients where, you know, they're fighting with between the U.S. citizen and the people of that domestic country. You know, people want their dividends and other people are like, no, don't issue our dividends because I'm going to get taxed, you know. So it's like, it's kind of a tug of war between shareholders sometimes, depending on, you know, how many people are U.S. citizens and how many people are foreigners.
Okay. Understood. That's a lot of high level information, man. I kind of want to bring it down a little bit because a lot of people, you know, who may be listening probably don't have those kind of problems at this point in time. And you being a tax accountant and also working with, you know, like we just covered, international finances, international disclosures, you have a wide spectrum of expertise when it comes to taxes. But on a base level, for the average, let's say, individual, entrepreneur, small business owner, entertainer, artist, writer, athlete, you know, I kind of want us to cover some things that they should be aware about. One thing that you said to me a couple years ago, actually, you said, if it's not bringing in money, it's not a business, it's a hobby. And I never forgot that because it clarified a lot of things to me, you know, and it's common sense, but, you know, sometimes, especially if you're passionate about something, you can kind of get displaced priorities. You know, you start putting your passions or, you know, the things that you're excited about over the things that are bringing in money right now. And so it's not the way that I, you know, the way that I interpret it and understand it is that it's cool to pursue your passions. Everybody has a dream, but you still got to pay your bills while you're pursuing that dream.
Yes.
So a lot of people who may be listening are, let's start with artists. Let's start with small business owners, you know, and they're not sure about taxes. They're not sure about finances. They're not sure about when taxes are triggered. Can you just give a brief overview of taxes, of how do I, as an entrepreneur, and an entrepreneur can cover a small business owner, it can cover an artist, it can cover an athlete, anybody who's going out on some kind of business venture, when do I need to be concerned about taxes?
Whenever you get issued a 1099, with the whole thing about taxes, it's a give or take. Someone reports the income, someone takes the deduction. If you ever get issued a 1099, that means you're someone's deduction. They're deducting the cost that it took to pay you to perform whatever you needed to do. So now that 1099 was issued to the government and recorded on their profit and loss.
So what is let me interrupt you real quick. What is a 1099?
A 1099 is a form used to record costs paid to a contractor without actually having to pay any taxes on their behalf.
Okay, so if I work as a contractor for somebody and they issue me a 1099, that means that they're paying taxes on what they paid me, and I have to also pay taxes on what they paid me. Is that correct?
No, you're not. They're not paying taxes. They're taking the deduction it costs for your service.
Okay.
And when you get issued a 1099, no one's paid any taxes as of right now. No taxes have ever been paid when you get issued a 1099. Now, when you record that 1099 your tax return, that's when you pay taxes, and that's when things can get costly. Whenever you get issued a W-2, which is from your employer, they're paying the taxes and you're paying the taxes at the same time. It's split. you know, like 7, you know what I'm saying? The employer pays about 7%, you know, go, give or take, and the employee pays 7%, give or take, you know, riding up to around 15 and X amount of percentage. When you get issued a 1099, you have to pay the whole 15% of unemployment, Social Security, and Medicare.
Okay, so let's say this. So let's say I have a business, right? Let's say I'm in the music business and I have a record label slash production company. So there are two kinds of people that I can hire to do work. I can either hire an independent contractor or I can hire an employee, right? Mm-hmm. So if I hire an independent contractor, then I have to issue them a 1099 for everything that I paid them to do whatever I hired them to do.
Yes, it would be ideal because you can keep track of that expense, which is that contract. If you don't issue them a 1099, what proof do you have that you actually had a contract?
Okay, and then if I hire a full-time employee, I have to issue them a W-2.
Yes, you have to put them on payroll, you know, prepare payroll tax returns for, you know, first, second, and third quarter, you know, along with state. And it can get costly. Usually that's why it's best to, as a business owner, it's always ideal to issue someone a 1099 because it's the least amount of work. You know, you don't have to pay, you know, do payroll, to worry about all that stuff, because payroll can get, of course you can deduct all the payroll except for federal, but it can still get costly because it's time consuming. You know, if you're not, you know, if your accounting is not that strong, you know, you can mess up and you can end up getting fines. That's usually why you always outsource to a payroll processor, which is always ideal. If you're ever going to put anyone on payroll, don't even try to do it yourself. Just go ahead and hire a payroll processor to do all the work. They file all the returns. You just got to pay the check at the end of the day. And you can set your limit on however you want to get paid. As a business owner, I would always... it's always ideal to put yourself on payroll.
So what's an example of a payment processor? And is that something an accounting firm like yours would do?
Yes, accounting firms would do payroll, but it's going to be costly. It's best to just go to someone who actually does payroll all day, every day. Not saying a CPA firm can't do it. They will do it, and they'll do it accurately. It's just going to cost.
And a payment processor would be less expensive. Okay, so ADP is an example of a payment processor.
Yes.
Okay, payroll processor. Okay. Now, before we double back to taxes, what are some standard services that an accounting firm like yours offers, right? So if I'm an artist, an entertainer, a producer, a writer, an athlete, a small business owner, why do I need an accountant, right? What am I going to get from hiring an accounting firm like yours?
What you get is organization. It's perspective on, you know, how am I looking so far throughout the year? You know, what am I profit and loss looking like? Am I in the hole, or, you know, am I positive? Tax planning, you know, how do I tackle next year? Making sure that, you know, my balance sheet makes sense. You know, when I present it to a board, or, you know, show someone how profitable I am as an artist or as a record label, you know, these are my figures, and you gotta understand that they're not accountants, but at the same time, they know what a balance sheet and a profit loss is supposed to be. So if you present your financial statements to a company saying, you know, this is how my record label is doing for the past 3 years, you know, as you can see, we're profitable in XYZ or, you know, or whatever, they're gonna be like, okay, he knows what he's doing. But if you present financial statements that don't make sense, but they make sense to you, you know, that's the problem. Just because you don't know as much as someone who looks at balance sheets and financial statements all day, every day, which is a tax account.
Right, and that's a very important point, man, because now, you know, the big thing is independence. In the music business, the big thing is independence. Everybody wants to be independent. Everybody wants to run their own company. Mm-hmm. Everyone, you know, wants to make it on their own, wants to really profit from doing it on their own. And then on the other side, in sports, we're seeing more and more athletes who are creating their own ventures. You know, of course, you have LeBron, who's done things like Uninterrupted. He has his own media company. There was recent news that Odell Beckham is launching his own production company. So we're seeing more and more examples of athletes really creating their own companies. And of course, entrepreneurship is big now. You know, people wanting to start their own businesses, really do things on their own. You have social media, which is making it easier for people to do such. But that's one thing that people don't really talk a lot about is the back office work, the organization piece, right? Everyone sees the glamorous, the press releases, this person starting their new company, this mm-hmm. and that, you know, and social media oftentimes makes things look easier or, you know, social media often makes things look more glamorous than it really is. But like you said, if there's no money coming in, there's no business, and it takes money to do business. It takes money to make money. And one of the ways that business owners, whether you're in the entertainment industry, the sports industry, or just a small business owner outside of that, one of the ways that you're going to generate that money is through investments, potentially. And before anybody invests in your company, they want to see how is your company doing. They want to be able to evaluate the business opportunity. And the main way that they do that is, like you mentioned, your financial statements.
Yes.
And your ability to show an investor how well you've done over time, from a profit standpoint. And profits will take into consideration, you know, your expenses, the assets that you have, and year over year growth. So you're saying that an accounting firm, one of the main benefits that you can offer a business owner, regardless of the industry that they're in, is that organization piece.
Yes, I'm not saying off, you know, the second that you start your business, you need an accountant. You know, it takes time, you know.
Okay.
Having an accounting, it can be costly. And it's like having, I don't know, it's like having a doctor. You know, it's not cheap having a doctor on standby to answer all your calls. So you have funds and that your business is actually doing well. And then I feel like you know when you need an accountant. If you're making a whole bunch of money and it's just getting crazy, yeah, it's probably time to get an accountant. You know, if you're only making $60 here, $100 here, you know, you don't really need an accountant. You know, that's something that you can figure out on your own. But once figures started getting big, you know, you might need to open up a building. You know, once you see you have to actually expand outside of your home, I think that's when you it's time to, you know, outsource and get opinion from someone else on the subject matter.
Understood. Now, let's say I'm an artist, I'm a producer, or I'm an athlete who is entering into some venture, and I say, okay, I want to start this business. I want to start making music. I want to put my music out on Spotify. I want to distribute my music, you know, through Apple. Or I'm an athlete, I want to start a production company, or I want to start a merchandise company, or whatever have you. From a structural point of view, what are some first steps that they need to take?
Well, you got to see who you're dealing with. Is this going to be a partnership, or are you just doing this by yourself? You know, those are the first two main factors. Are you the only investor? Are you just a person who has the idea and you need people to invest into you? You know, and you have to structure your business a certain way because things are taxed differently. Depending
can
on
you
the
give, can you give a brief overview of the different paths that the entrepreneur can take? You know, if they're doing it themselves, if they're entering into a partnership, if they have outside investment, can you just give a brief overview of some of the options that they have and then the pros and the cons of those different options?
Well, first off, you have to start a business. So, you know, you create an LLC,
okay.
Which is, you know, a limited liability company. You can either report that LLC on your personal tax return, which is considered a flow through, or you can do a partnership with someone else and you guys, you know, enter this agreement verbally or on paper, and then you guys file a 1065. You know, you form it. You get an EIN number and, you know, you continue with that. Or you could do an 1120 S, which is another flow through company. Well, an LLC, which is reported on your 1040, is a flow through. Mm-hmm. A partnership is also, which is a 1065, is a flow through that will be reported on both of your individual tax returns. Or you could do an 1120S, which is also a flow through. But with that, you could put yourself on payroll and you can issue yourself a 1099 and take yourself as a deduction in your own company. Or you could do an 1120, which is a C corporation, which there's just, you know, shareholders, and then the company is taxed at source and it's not a flow through. So the company will have to pay taxes, and then you will be you can put yourself on payroll as well and be a deduction to that 1120 C corporation. There's different tax limits when you're being considered a flow through.
Okay.
And you're getting, the company's getting taxed at source. So if you do a partnership, it's a straight flow through. So if you guys make $100,000 through the year, there's two people, you're getting taxed on whatever your particular percentage is. It could be by profit, it could be by percentage, or special allocation, or however you want to do it. But you're gonna get taxed at whatever your profit is. But say you put yourself on payroll as an 1120S, you could set your payroll to be what? Out of $100,000 for the year, I want my payroll to be 40%. I get paid $40,000. I take my deduction, and then I can hit out distribution to myself, which will be untaxed as long as above your basis. And what I mean by basis is how much money do you put into this company at source, each throughout the year or in the beginning. There's different factors that affect your basis. Are you paying off liabilities? That's contributions. Are you putting money into the company? That's contributions. Is the company making money? That also can increase your basis. And distributions, which is subtracting from the company, which will lower your basis. And anything below, if your basis gets to zero, where you distributed as much money as you could to yourself, the second you distribute yourself less than your basis, you're hit with capital gains. And that's, that's like 21% off of anything that's given to you from the company. So that can be quite costly along with all the other taxes that you have to pay.
Okay. And I'm aware, man, that this might be going over a lot of people's heads. A lot of it goes over my head, to be honest. But the main thing is that you have to have your ducks in a row. You have to know what you're doing once you start making money from your business, right? Because we see the stories all the time of artists, entertainers, athletes who owe millions of dollars in back taxes, or the IRS has put a lien on somebody's property, or this person has had to declare bankruptcy. And a main reason for that is just because they didn't have their ducks in a row. They didn't have this organization. They didn't have their business properly structured. They didn't have the proper processes. You talked about the payroll processors. You talked about understanding the different tax structures for the different corporate entities, whether you have a LLC, whether you have an S corp, whether you have a C corp. And when artists, athletes, entrepreneurs aren't keeping up with their taxes, those things can pile up, especially when you're making a lot of money. Because one thing that I see, man, so many, when we talk about entertainment, when we talk about sports, most of these guys and women who are making a lot of money, they come into it at a very young age. So they don't know anything about taxes. They don't know anything about structuring their business. Oftentimes, they don't have proper business representation. Mm-hmm. Or they just, don't have very, the representation that they do have doesn't always do the right thing. And so as they're making this money and they're not keeping up with their taxes, they're essentially digging themselves into a hole. And what a lot of people don't understand about entertainment and sports is that, those careers can be very volatile. So a lot of the individuals within those industries, they earn large sums of money, but in very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. And they often can't sustain that level of income. Now, that's a problem because when you come into a lot of money quickly, I remember, you know, we spoke about, you know, we went to the same college. We were roommates for a little while. I remember, man, when people would get that refund check, you know, we would blow it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
We would blow it because you're getting, you know, you're in college. You probably haven't had a very real job and you're getting thousands of dollars at one time. And you probably haven't had, you know, for a lot of us, we didn't have that amount of money at one time. So we didn't know how to handle it. You know what I mean? No. We will spend that money on all sorts of things. Now, we're just talking about a few thousand bucks. Imagine people who come into tens, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars in a very short amount of time. You know, so when people say, man, I can't believe this person went broke. Well, it's because they were young. It's because they were a kid, you know, and like any other kid, you know, they don't understand the value of it.
I would say if you ever come across an abundance amount of money, the first two things I would get is a lawyer and an accountant. You know, you have to get someone that you trust. You can't get a money hungry lawyer or a money hungry accountant because then you're still stuck in, you know, where you're not in a good place. But if you're able to find you a good lawyer who can, you know, make sure they're overreading all these documents that everyone's making you sign, and then all these business ventures, you know, you can ask your accountant to look over the company. You know, look, can you, you know, as an accountant, you know, of course you have to pay them, but like, hey, you know, I have this business venture. Can you please look over these financial statements and tell me what you think about it? You can get that opinion from your accountant, you know.
That's important, man, because, you know, the guys who make a lot of the money, what the guys and women who make a lot of money and oftentimes come from backgrounds where they didn't have a lot of money and the people around them didn't have a lot of money, some of the first things that happen to them is they start getting hit up for money. Whether it's family members, whether it's homeboys, homegirls approaching them with, you know, even apart from asking just for a hookup, you have all sorts of people approaching them for investment opportunities, quote unquote, investment ideas. People who have never started a business before all of a sudden have a great investment idea for these people, you know, and a lot of them, you know, because right or wrong, you know, whether they just want to help out, you know, somebody who they grew up with, or whether they want to make money from an investment, they will, quote unquote, invest that money without having and doing that due diligence into the business. And we see those stories all the time, especially of athletes who either didn't have a trustworthy advisor or didn't take the time to, you know, consult an advisor to look over their business, that business opportunity. So I think that's a real jewel that you just dropped. You know, for anyone who comes into a lot of money at one time, the first thing that you need is an attorney and an accountant. I think that is very important.
One comment to state about business ventures, don't get it wrong. You can buy a business that's already established. You don't have to start from scratch. You know, I think it's called buy, sell, biz, where you can acquire businesses that are already established and you just pretty much just hop it on the bicycle and just continue whatever they're doing. I mean, of course, you got to take out, you know, you have to buy into it, which is like in this business. I mean, but at the same time, you know, this business has been doing, you can read about it. It has financial statements. It's been going forever long. It's hard to believe in someone from the bottom. You know, yes, the profit is bigger when you started from the bottom, but at the end of the day, you still have to invest in the money. So why not invest in buying a Burger King that's already established or buying, a car wash or a laundromat, something that you know that's sustainable.
Franchise. And that's why we see so many, well, I'm not going to say so many, but we see a lot of successful, we see a lot of athletes succeed in franchises. You know, Shaq and Chauncey Billups, you know, even Rick Ross has invested in Checkers. You know, these franchises, fast food chains, restaurants that already have a successful brand. You know, one of the most popular investments that a lot of artists or athletes make is in restaurants, new restaurants, and that's actually one of the worst investments that you can actually make is to try to start a new restaurant. One, because a lot of people don't even think about this, but just common sense. There's a food chain, there's a restaurant on every corner. Mm-hmm. And the overhead for a restaurant is so high, right? One example that I like to point out is Michael Jordan started a restaurant in Chicago and it didn't succeed. So and Michael Jordan is like a king in Chicago. So mm-hmm. if his restaurant didn't succeed, and this we're talking about Michael Jordan, arguably the most famous, popular athlete of all time, if his restaurant didn't succeed in his hometown, you know, the city where he played most of his career, people should be very cautious before they jump into that game and try to start one from scratch. But like you mentioned, if I can invest in a McDonald's or Burger King or a Checkers or Chick-fil-A, if I can just hop on their train and capitalize on the brand equity that they've already built, then why not? You know, I think one thing though is, and this is important, like you said, man, of having people like you, people who understand the business, who understand money, who can evaluate opportunities. One of the important things about that is you can tell a good idea from a bad idea. And I think a lot of athletes, what they rely on is what's sexy, right? what's in the media or what sounds good, right? So when somebody approaches them with a tech company idea, you know, they might jump at it because every day we're hearing about some tech company that is a unicorn, you know, that just acquired, you know, billions of dollars in investment or just went public. We hear about Mark Zuckerberg. We hear about Bill Gates. We hear about Steve Jobs. But what you don't hear about is the 99% of other tech, you know, startup founders that failed.
Yes. You know? I learned this in undergrad. Businesses only last 5 years. Wow. And if you make it past that 5-year mark, then you're pretty much going to last for a while.
Wow.
And that's just the honest truth. You know, you got how many people on this earth and they all want to start a business. You know, somebody's bound to fail.
Right.
And at the end of the day, you have to make sure if you're starting a business that is true. You know, like if you're doing food, hire good cooks. You know, don't hire someone that you think can cook. You know, like if you want to pay for quality, like say you wanted to get some, you know, I'm just speaking in general. Say you wanted to get some sneakers.
Right.
You know, and it's the quality of the sneaker, you know, so you have to pay for that quality. So if you want to have a successful, you know, food industry, hire a good cook and pay him well. I mean, you're going to go in the hole, you know, because you got to pay for someone to survive. But if they're making that great food, it's going to bring in people. Like, it's just word of mouth. And it doesn't take long for a business to boom if it has true employees who actually care about, making you satisfied or take passion in what you do, because there's nothing worse than getting served by someone who doesn't care about what they're serving you.
I think that's a very great point, man. And two things that you said that stuck out to me is hire somebody who knows, one, what they're doing, right, who has experience in it, who is qualified, who is competent, and then also somebody who's passionate. And then you said pay them well. And you know, when I look at successful companies, big companies, one thing that you always see, like, so we look at these huge companies and people say, wow, this company is so big, whether it's AT&T or Verizon or, you know, Walt Disney. We look at these corporations, but the average person only looks at it from like a superficial point of view, right? And I'm not saying that that's not an insult, but what I'm saying is most the average person is not actually reading financial statements, is not actually studying business strategy, you know what I mean? But one thing that you see with a lot of these companies is that one thing that I've seen anyway is when a large company is acquired, one of the first things that the whether it's a private equity firm or whatever have you, one of the first things that they do is they put in a CEO who has a track record. They give them favorable stock options, right? Benefits package, you know, and not just salary, but they give them a stock option so that when they leave, they still have that windfall, right? A lot of people complain about CEO salaries, especially for a lot of big companies. You know, we just saw people, something that's been in the news lately is a lot of people have been complaining about how much Bob Iger, the CEO of Walt Disney, gets paid. Mm-hmm. Now, right or wrong, I'm not making a judgment on that. I'll leave that for other people to decide. But one of the reasons why people like him get paid so much is, one, not just because the company is so big and the company is so brings in so much money, but also because you want the guy to be invested in what he's doing. You know what I mean? If okay, let's bring it down. If an athlete is starting a new company, well, if that athlete is playing, right? If that athlete is still in his career, let's take LeBron, for example. LeBron started uninterrupted with one of his friends, Maverick Carter. Now, I can guarantee you that Maverick Carter probably has an ownership stake in that company, right? Because LeBron is still playing. So this guy is essentially running the company full time. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to incentivize somebody like that. You have to make it so that he's not going to want to leave at the first option, at the first opportunity. You know, you got to incentivize him to where he wants to stay. And that's something that, you know, a lot of times people don't understand. But also, you talked about making sure that the people have a passion for it and that people know what they're doing. I think that's just something so simple, man, that people just overlook. A lot of times people just want to start businesses. They don't know why they want to start it. Or they go into businesses with people who don't have any experience doing that thing. You know, and it's like, why? You know, I know there's one quote, I can't remember who said it, but essentially they said, it was Henry Ford. Basically, he said that it's a terrible idea to go into business simply to make money. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to not just go into business to make money, but go into business because you want to make a difference, or because it's something that you're passionate about, or it's because you're good at it, or because there's some other tangible result that you want to bring about. But anyway, I think those key points that you talked about, when going into business or when hiring somebody to run your business, you need to make sure that they have experience, that they're competent, that they're capable at that thing, and that also they have a passion for it, right? Because, you know, one thing I know about passion, man, is that if you're not passionate about it, you're not going to be able to make it through, like you said, those first 5 years, because it's tough. you know what I mean? It's very tough, especially when you're first starting out. You know, I'm an attorney and I practice my own firm, and I can tell you it's very tough trying to get clients, and not just get clients, but also get clients who can afford to pay.
Right? With that comment, at the end of the day, you'll never get paid enough. You'll never feel like you get paid enough. But at the same time, when you're hiring people, you have to understand, like, if you don't have happy employees, you're not going to have a good running business. Because it's nothing worse than having your employees hate you because you are either cheap or you're mean or downgrading them or XYZ. As a boss, you don't look at, you don't, when you're a boss, you're not supposed to boss people around. You know, you're supposed to be a leader. And when you're bossing people around, it makes them feel some type of way. And there's nothing worse than having all your employees just leave you because you don't know how to be a correct boss or a leader.
Right.
It's supposed to be a team thing. And jobs don't end at 5:00. They don't end at 4:45.
Facts. Big facts.
So you have to realize that, you know, if you're going to hire someone, you want them to be passionate so they do the extra hours. And if they are doing extra hours and they're putting in the extra work, give them something. Let them know that you appreciate their work. Don't be like, this is expected. Or, you know, if you're a record label and they're making music and you're taking off 20%, you know, give them other things, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're taking from their plate, and you have to make them feel that your 20% is worth it, you know, or 40% or however you structure your contracts.
For sure.
You know, yeah.
For sure. That's golden, man. That's golden. Well, as we wind down, man, are there any other tips or is there any other advice that you can give? Because I feel like a lot of people who are listening will be people who are either thinking about starting a business, thinking about entrepreneurship, thinking about, you know, their entertainment career, their sports career, thinking about ways to make more money, enter into other ventures, or people who are just starting out, have started that business, have made some traction, and are really trying to become more organized and, of course, you know, run a more profitable business. Are there any other tips, any other pointers that you can give people?
All I would say is don't give up when things get bad, because usually that's when things are going to get better. Don't waste all of your money doing something. You know, strategize, you know, think about it and work at the same time. You can't do a hobby that doesn't make any money and expect to live a lavish lifestyle. Like, you have to work. There's nothing wrong with working a regular job. I used to work at Zaxby's. I used to be a lifeguard. Like, I didn't make money in the beginning, you know, but I had to work in the meantime, learn accounting on the side. And eventually, right, the accounting started to outweigh my regular jobs where I could quit those regular jobs.
Right. That's good.
Just be mindful of people's intentions and just always think and have a pure heart when it comes to the business. Don't think about it in a grimy way or I have to get the money. Be kind about it. Be organic when you're doing your business, and just read every day.
That's a big one, man. That's a big one, and that's something that people don't want to do. But thank you, man. I really appreciate you hopping on here with me. I appreciate you. We're going to put your information up there for people to check you out and also your firm's website and everything like that. But can you just give a quick shout out to, you know, any of your social media pages or where people can find out more about you or your firm?
If you want to look at my firm, it is KSDT. -cpa.com. My personal social media is kind of my personal social media, so I don't really do too much business. It's kind of like my life, you know, my personal life. So I'm not there yet. I haven't created a business page or anything like that. But
understood. So KSDT-cpa.com is where people can check out all the firm, all the information about your firm. The solutions that you guys provide, the industries that you guys work in. I know you guys represent, of course, individuals concerning tax issues, concerning foreign tax issues. Your firm represents all sorts of industries. Can you just talk about a little bit about some of the industries that your firm represents?
We work with NASCAR drivers to athletes to guys who make seats for stadiums, to your regular investors, to doctors, lawyers, anyone you could ever think of. We pretty much have touched, even farmers, even being in Miami. There's no avenue that we haven't touched. There's no one that we can't help. And yeah, we do bookkeeping, all that, tax planning, anything you could ever think of.
That's dope, man. That's dope. Again, thanks a lot, Mike. I appreciate you being here, man. Means a lot. Have a good one. I'm glad it's been a long time coming, but we got it done. Thanks again. All right.
That was today's episode with Michael Anyanwu from KSDT, a tax accountant at an accounting firm in Miami, Florida. I want to thank Mike very much for joining us today. He shared a lot of knowledge. It may take you a few times to listen to this episode to really soak in what he talked about. I know that me and Mike have had numerous conversations about these topics. Even attorneys need counsel too, and I'm definitely not an accountant. But anyway, I want to thank Mike very much for joining us. You can find out more information on him if you want to reach him or his firm. You can find that in the description of the podcast. I will be leaving as we end. Every episode, I'm going to leave you guys with a music pick, a song that I'm listening to at the time that I'm really feeling. Today's song is called Toast. It comes from Coffee, the artist. She's a young artist out of Jamaica. It was produced by Izzy Beats. Yo, Izzy, are you kidding me? Thank you guys very much for joining us today. And remember, if we create it, we might as well own it.